It's the 19th hole with Michael Williams.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the 19th hole. I'm your host, Michael Williams, bringing you the best of the best of the best of the best in golf and golf lifestyle. And I don't have to work very hard this week because it is U.S. Open week, by golly. And the U.S. Open is being held at Oakmont Country Club, fabled, storied, notorious for its wonderful surroundings and its almost surreally brutalistic golf course. It is a true test of a major champion, and we're going to have it right here. It's here. It's open week, and I couldn't be more excited. Joining me this week is someone who is, if you can have someone who is almost synonymous with U.S. Open golf, he would be my guest this week. He has won every design award you can possibly think of, plus he proudly goes by the name of the Open Doctor. He is, of course, none other than the spectacular Rhys Jones. He's going to be joining me today to talk about golf, to talk about Oakmont in particular, and about this week's winner and tournament specifically. It's going to be a great show. I want you to be a part of it. Before I do that, I want to open the show by talking about the fact that I played in the media day this week at the U.S. Open. I had a chance to play and see all my good friends, Fred Perpall with the USGA, John Bodenhammer, who is the Bodes is just one of the most spectacular guys, taking over from Mike Davis, who you think could have really no one to follow him up. But John, in his way that is so quiet and so under the radar, he is a genius and a master of course setup, and he is doing wonderful things with this Oakmont setup. I had a chance to meet him and talk to him, all of the great people who are involved with the USGA, and of course we had a chance to play the course. And I have played it before. I played it the last time the Open was there. I played it famously. I played the course the Sunday before the Open, and that's how cool this place is. They had public play, or member play, up until the Sunday before the thing actually began. So on Monday, it's the U.S. Open, but on Sunday, it's just, you know, Oakmont Country Club, and you get to go out and play it. Of course, you're playing in U.S. Open conditions. I was very proud of the fact, and I saved the ball from there because I played that round with one ball. I shot, I believe, 108, but I shot it with one ball. This time, I did a little better as far as the score is concerned. I kept it under 100. I even got one birdie on number 9. We were off and on during rain, and the rain was really starting to come down hard on number 9. I had a third shot that was about 150 in, and I just said, as the song in Frozen goes, let it go. And I ended up about 3 inches from the pin. So that was one birdie on the front side. I think I had another one on the back side. a couple more pars and a lot of others. It is a just brutal, demanding test of golf. The Oakmont U.S. Open, every single hole. There are courses that have stretches that compare in difficulty to Oakmont. You have that middle stretch at Shinnecock, which is extremely difficult. You have Wingfoot, which has stretches there on the front and on the back, which are as difficult. You have Kiowa with the wind conditions that can be just as difficult. The Ocean Course, a true test of golf. But I think front to back, side to side, the two most difficult courses in the world are Carnoustie and Oakmont. And you just can take the day and you can figure out which one is harder on that particular day. Oakmont is just a beast and a bear. And when you win a major championship at Oakmont, you've really done something. Let's look at the U.S. Open winners. And just to look at how iconic they are, the first winner, U.S. Open winner at Oakmont is Tommy Armour in 1927. Then you get Sam Parks Jr. You go on to 1953, and you have the great Ben Hogan winning their second place as Sam Snead. In 1962, famously, you had the great battle with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer actually tying and then going into an 18-hole playoff. One of the great Open Championships, one of the great golf events ever. Then the next time it was held there, one of the most famous closing rounds of all time. 1973, you have Johnny Miller winning the Open with his famous Sunday 63, one of the great rounds ever played. Larry Nelson in 1973, Tom Watson in second place. You have Ernie Els winning in 94 with Colin Montgomery and Lauren Roberts one shot behind, the Els winning in a playoff with Roberts and Montgomery. Montgomery famously having never won on the PGA Tour. You have U.S. Open winner Angel Cabrera, one of the very few to have won a Masters and a U.S. Open. Second place there, tied. He won it plus five, by the way, in 2007. Let's take a look at that, the scores. Plus five is your winning score. Second place, Jim Furyk and Tiger Woods at plus six. Again, I'm going to repeat that. Plus five as your winning score. That's incredible. And then the last time you had the Open there was 2016. You had Dustin Johnson, who was four under. And it was a magnificent, magnificent round, four rounds for Dustin Johnson, who was at the height of his powers then, driving the ball as far as anybody ever had up until that point on the PGA Tour, as straight with that cut of his. Jim Furyk, Shane Lowry, Scott Piercy, all tying for second place at one under. But When you look at that group of players, you see Hall of Famers and Hall of Fame performances. And that's really what you have to put up at Oakmont. You have to put up a Hall of Fame performance for 4 days. It is a true test of mind and body and spirit and your ability to overcome, your courage, if you will. I mean, you don't get hit in golf. Nobody's standing over you. Nobody's going to pummel you going out of bounds, that sort of thing. But if there's any round of golf, any four rounds, any tournament that gives you a physical test unlike any other in golf, I think Oakmont is going to be one of those. There's, again, Carnoustie being one of the others. You feel it out there. You feel physically the toil, the toll that course is taking on you as you're playing it and after you're finished. Even one round, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine what it would be like playing four in four rounds of 4 days in a row. It's just to get through those rounds, I think, ought to get a trophy. To have a low score is truly something special. Who's my pick for this week? Scottie Scheffler, obviously. One of the favorites. He's the betting favorite. He's been playing so well. He's overcome his injury and is back to where he was previously at the pinnacle of the sport. He is probably one of the most reliable iron players we've ever seen in modern times right now. And doing it again with a swing that sort of defies belief. So Scottie's definitely in there. For me, and look, you have Rory McIlroy, who just came off that cathartic Masters win. He hasn't done great since then. He's had some equipment problems. He's still, I think, sort of getting rid of the stress, the detritus of coming out of that Masters win and coming out of that whole thing with being the spokesman for the PGA Tour during the LIV Golf controversy, all of those things. He's sort of just getting out of that and shaking free of that. The Masters being a part of that sort of cathartic experience for him. Most people are going one or the other in that direction. But for me, what I'd like to see is what we saw. I don't know if you guys are tennis fans, but if you aren't, you should be. What we saw at the French Open, when we saw the number one in the world, Jannik Sinner, going up against number two in the world, Carlos Alcaraz, and you had the number two in the world winning in just epic fashion. I think it was the second longest match in major championship history. I believe it was the longest in the French Open's history, but it was epic to see. It was like watching some sort of fantasy novel play out in front of you with these two epic characters going back and forth at it. And I think when you talk about epic characters in golf, you're talking about Scottie, you're talking about Rory, but you add that third character, which is the golf course, Oakmont, which is, again, an epic opponent. So it's not only the two players vying against each other, it's how they deal with the third player, that antagonist that is Oakmont. So to be clear, look, it could be Scotty, it could be Rory, it could be somebody else. Could be John Rahm, could be Bryson. You know, he's had yet another equipment change. So maybe this is the equipment change that gets him hitting the shots that he wants to, because it doesn't seem to be about him. It's always about something that he's using. God bless him. But I honestly don't care who is in the lead, but I want to see one of those players, like a John Rahm, a Rory, a Scotty, hopefully all three or four of these players, DeChambeau, headed for the finish, tied or within one shot of each other, one or two shots of each other on the back nine. I want to see an epic finish. I want to see golfers battling each other and battling the elements, battling that golf course for what I believe is the top prize in golf. It is time for that to happen. The thing that the LIV Tour has deprived us is week-to-week rivalry, to see one guy against the other guy win or lose, or one guy float to the top despite the other guys. You know, like we had with Tiger for 10, 13, 14 years, where he, no matter who was a challenger, he remained on top with some of the most epic golf, probably the most epic golf any of us will ever see. I'd like to see someone either establish himself, either a group establish themselves as rivals, or one player against all others to establish himself as the player. But he's going to do that with everybody in the competition. And that's what we have in the major championships. That's what we have at this U.S. Open. And we have not only the players, we have the venue that can make true history. It's really going to be amazing. I'm so looking forward to seeing this thing. I will be out there on Saturday and Sunday, and I will report back on what I see. It's going to be special. It's going to be really, really something. And I hope you get a chance to watch every single minute of it. I hope you get a chance to watch every single minute after it. And I hope you listen to the rest of this show for, number one, predictions going in and analysis coming out. We'll be here for you. Like I said, we have a great show today with the one, the only, Rhys Jones. It's going to be huge. I think you're going to love it. And I think you're going to be pretty interested in his prediction for this U.S. Open. What is it? Wait and see. We'll be right back. Michael Williams, 19.
Hey there, Jay Peterman here, John O'Hurley, and you are listening to Mike Williams and the 19th Hole.
Welcome back to the 19th Hole. Michael Williams, your host on this beautiful U.S. Open edition of the 19th Hole. I'm super excited because it is at one of my favorite golf courses in the entire world, really, the famous and, dare I say, notorious Oakmont. It is it's a beast. I'll be honest. I played, as I said, in the media day event there, and I said my greatest accomplishment in golf before was having played that course with one ball. I shot like 110, but I played it with one ball. This time, I actually got a birdie. It was unbelievable on number nine. So it's But there's a lot of others out there, too. It is a brutal course, a true test of golf and of spirit, of humanity, really. How you play and how you respond to that course really says something about yourself. Joining me here is a man who has seen this course and many others like it. He is a winner of the Donald Ross Award. He is a Hall of Fame golf course architect. He is known to you, probably, as the Open Doctor, and I hope that I can refer to him as friend. Please welcome the wonderful, the amazing Rhys Jones to the 19th hole. Rhys, how are you, my friend?
Great to be with you, Michael. You are a great friend.
Well, I really appreciate that, and I was, as I was preparing for this show, I was listening to the episodes that we did in previous years where we do the prediction. We're going to do the predictions year this year. But you have been remarkably accurate in your predictions for the U.S. Open. And last year you got not only the winner, but the winning score. Is that right?
That's right. You got to get lucky sometime in life.
My friend, after that day, I would have headed straight for the track, okay? I don't know where you're living, but Saratoga would have been my next stop.
Las Vegas, you're right. It should have been in Las Vegas.
Vegas, baby. I mean, it was amazing how accurately you're able to assess these courses and the players that are on them. So we're going to go for that one more time here this year. We're going to do a little bit of history involving the course, and we'll do a little bit about the players. But first, I just want to ask you, how are you, my friend? What do you got going on these days? Where are you based out of, and what do you got going on?
Well, doing very well. Still based out of New Jersey, and it's really Florida in the wintertime. And a lot of work in Florida. A new project just about to start in Puerto Rico with three major hotels. And looking at a couple of jobs in South America. And the game is not booming like it did years ago, but it's growing steadily.
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to put it. It is growing steadily because a different group of people is getting involved in it and feeling it out. And they have so many different ways to touch the game through virtual golf, through Topgolf, through so many things that end in golf, but don't necessarily end in the golf course. But there's a lot of people coming to the game and checking it out, and that can only be a good thing, I think, anyway. I think it can be a good thing.
Well, COVID started it. People found golf that never played before, found that they could enjoy the game, even if they weren't that proficient at playing it. And it's become as much of a social game as a competitive game. And I think that's why the sport is doing so well.
Amen to that. Yeah, you don't have to be a great player to have a great time. I think that's what a lot of people have discovered.
That's right.
But we have at Oakmont, at this U.S. Open, we have nothing but great players. And I think one of the truly great golf courses in the world, our good friend John Bodenhammer from the USGA has said that there are three courses he knows he can do a U.S. Open in 2 weeks. That's Pebble Beach, Pinehurst, and Oakmont. And I would say after having been on those properties, I agree. I concur. Let's talk a little bit about the history of Oakmont. What makes that place so special from beginning to end?
Well, it's special because Henry Fownes set out to design a world-class competitive golf course, a championship golf course, a golf course that was really an inland links. He wanted the ground game to be played on it. It was designed to host major championships, and it's fulfilled his optimism and his dream, to tell you the truth, more than any other golf course in the USGA rotation.
And, you know, sort of from beginning to end, front nine, back nine, any section you want to choose, I truly believe that it's in the running for the most difficult golf course in the world. Now, you could say maybe Carnoustie, maybe Oakmont. But between those two, I think you've got your choice for most difficult course in the world. Of course, I haven't played them all. But what's your assessment in terms of just the pure difficulty of that course and how they managed to ramp it up every year for U.S. Open?
No, it is the most difficult in my mind in the U.S. Open rotation. And it is maybe one of the most difficult, if not the most difficult golf course in America, because it has characteristics that a lot of golf courses, that normal golf courses just don't have. And if the course doesn't penalize you in one way, it finds another way to get you.
Yeah, it does. And what's remarkably not there is water. You don't find water on that golf course, but it manages still to test and challenge every single shot from every single player. As you look at the whole course, are there a couple of holes that stand out for you in terms of the tests and what it asks you to do?
Well, it doesn't have water, but it has the drainage ditches that really present a penal aspect of the game and a sort of a water hazard penalty. It has the multiple bunkers. It just, and it has the high rough too. It's 5 inches for the U.S. Open. I would say the finish is very interesting because you got a long par three that's really, you got a par coming in, and then 17 is the reachable par four, and then 18 is the one of the two par fours that are over 500 yards. I would say those three holes really have determined the champion. 17 has kept some of the players from winning. And then you have holes like two, which is a shorty, but has a very difficult green, probably the most difficult and smallest green on the golf course. And then nine is a converted par five to a par four, and that's a very difficult hole too. And eight is the longest par three in the U.S. Open history. It's going to be played around 300 yards.
Yeah, it's a par three at 300 yards. It's a testament both to that golf course and to the players who are playing it. They would even set up a hole in that way, because that's an automatic four for most people, or more for most people. It's just mind-boggling, some of the difficulty out there. If you had to pick one hole as the most difficult, is there a hole that you would choose as the single most difficult hole at Oakmont?
Well, they say the first hole is the most difficult par four.
I agree.
In U.S. Open history, but the real reason is the first green falls away from you from front to back, and if you hit it in the rough and it's close to 500 yards long, it's maybe 490. If you hit it in the rough, you just really have to lay it up in front. You cannot try to hit that green because the ball will release to the back or off the green. So I think maybe number one, I mean, Aaron Baddeley took a triple bogey when he was leading the Open years ago in the final round. And you just got to get out of that. You got to get off of that hole and onto number two where you have a treacherous green. But there's no let up at Oakmont. So there are other holes that other people might pick. But I think number one may be the one that I would pick.
I think I would agree with you. The number one, you're just getting started out there, and you have to hold the ball on this green. And even the caddy will definitely tell you about this thing that you're facing, and you still can't do it. You know it, and you still can't do it. And to me, that's one of the signs of a truly challenging hole. We're talking to the great Rhys Jones, the Open Doctor, here on the 19th hole. Michael Williams, your host. So we've had some great players here. One of my all-time favorite rounds, I remember listening to this, even when I was a little kid, I was a fan of all sports. Even though I didn't play golf growing up, I listened to the U.S. Open, and I remember 1973 U.S. Open with Johnny Miller shooting that 63 on Sunday. I'm sure you remember it too. How much does the course have in common with the course that hosted that 63 by Johnny Miller, that great 63, and how much has it changed?
Well, it's changed a lot, but it's been minimal. Over the years, the fountains kept changing. Back when they were building and rebuilding it, they were changing it every year, adding bunkers, moving bunkers, removing bunkers. At one point, there were 300 and some odd bunkers at Oakmont. Then the Depression came, and they eliminated half of them. And then after the Depression, they brought a lot of them back. My father refurbished all the bunkers in the 50s and 60s, and he's the one that caused the furrows to be eliminated because he replaced the Allegheny River sand with white silica sand, where the rake really wouldn't have the 2-inch deep furrows. So it's changed a lot because it doesn't have the furrows anymore. But then the bunkers were made deeper in the 90s. They made shallower this year and flatter. So now the ball will end up on the edge of the bunker, which means you almost have no shot, but hopefully a wedge to get out of there. Mm-hmm. So I would say the bunkers are very effective at Oakmont. It's usually the rough that's most effective, but I think the rough and the combination of the bunkers means you have to keep the ball on the short grass.
And I'd said it before we started talking, in that last little piece about the course, that Johnny Miller 63, I think maybe is the best round I've ever seen. Where does that round rank for you in terms of the great rounds you've ever seen played?
Well, I mean, I guess Hogan's final round at Oakland Hills, you know, it's hard to say, but Tiger's putted Torrey Pines.
Yeah, there's that.
but I'd say Johnny Miller's round, because he was freewheeling it, because he was, well, back of the pack. And then he started making everything. And fortunately for him, it rained on Saturday night and softened up the golf course. And the golf course is soft now. It's been raining like crazy at Oakmont this week. So I hope they're able to dry out those greens, because the real defense of Oakmont, despite the rough and the bunkers, is the defense is the green contours.
That's very true. That's critical to the defense of the course, the defense of par. And I think John and some others at the USGA, well, they won't talk openly about it. They really won't do that too much. But I think that they're looking for a score. They'd be just fine with a score that was over par for your winner. Do you think that's fair in today's game? Do you think that a course should be set up so that a winner comes in at par or over par? Or is that an antiquated idea that's being pursued by the USGA?
Well, it may be an antiquated idea, but it's a possibility at Oakmont. And, I mean, Marion did the same thing. I don't remember what Rose shot, but I see he's around par. And Beth Page, Black, Tiger's the only one just barely under par. And I think that's what you're going to see at Oakmont this week. Although I think from the defense of the golf course, the fact that it rains so much, we'll keep the scores a little bit lower.
Yeah, that's true. And that was, let's see, at Marion, that was Justin Rose, who Justin Rose was the only player under par who won that thing. And that was another sense of carnage. We can talk about that one all day, another show.
That's right.
But so let's talk about a winner. We just have a silhouette of a winner here and a silhouette of him holding up the trophy. What did that guy do so well to win that week? What will you have to do well to win at Oakmont?
Well, the rough is 5 inches, and the bunkers are very penal, as penal as they come. So it's going to have to be a player that keeps the ball on the fairway. But he also has to know how to putt. And everybody's picking Scottie Scheffler, and I think he's the man that can really manage his game, because he's got the mental approach to the game. I think he can keep it on the fairway, and he's definitely putting very well these days.
Right. So we started mentioning some names here. Let's get into some names, starting with Scotty. He's the betting favorite for a lot of people. Is he your betting favorite, too, to win the championship?
I think because it's Oakmont and because it's such a stern test, I think you're going to have a player who's been through the mill before. And I think that's probably my favorite because of that. I think John Rahm is on the verge of breaking out, and I think he's got a very good chance, too. I'm not sure that Rory will be able to recover from what happened last year at Pinehurst, but he's got his Masters, so I think he's sitting pretty right now. But I would think John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler. I think you're going to have somebody like Rory or Scottie or John that will win because they're seasoned.
And what you're pointing to right there with that group of people is people who are very, very accurate, very long and very accurate with their driver. I think driver means everything at a course like this. You've got to be able to be out there, number one, and be out there where you want to be, not just anywhere. You've got to have the right angles into many of these greens. And it's really appropriate that we're having thunder and lightning here while we're talking about this course, I'll say, too. It seems really appropriate. But you have to be long, and you have to drive it in the right place. Rory's had some problems with their driver. Talk about him in this year. I mean, he had that cathartic moment at the Masters, but hey, you still got a whole career left in this guy. What do you see are his great advantages at Oakmont, and what do you see as his greatest challenges at Oakmont?
Well, the real Rory's disadvantage is the fact that you just brought up, that he's not doesn't hit it as straight off the tee, and when he won at Congressional, the rough was really down, and that's why he scored so well.
Yeah.
And the same thing at Augusta, doesn't have much of a rough, but And he can really move the ball. He can go from, you know, he hit around the trees on 15 and made one of the great shots in Masters history. But I think the rough's going to be 5 inches. It's going to be moist. I don't know if it'll rain again, but if it rains again, it won't be easy to hack out of. I think DeChambeau is so strong that if he gets in that rough, he's better off than most of them. So you're going to have a long, strong player, because when they get in the rough, it'd be nice if they can forward the ball, which a lot of players will not be able to do at Oakmont. Even if they get in some of the bunkers, they're going to have to hit wedges to get back into play. So I think that's why Scotty is being the favorite by so many people, because he does manage his drives. He keeps it pretty far down the fairway. For those greens, several which fall away, like 10 and 12 and 1, and the 17 falls off on the sides. I think hitting a long drive into those greens is going to be very important to have a short club in your hand.
Well, I'll say for Scotty, he's definitely a favorite for me, but I have one issue with him, and it's a big issue. It's basically his swing. His footwork is just kind of preposterous. When you compare it to the cookie-cutter perfection that you see in a lot of players out there, you see just this smooth transfer of weight up onto the top foot, maybe lifting up, this sort of thing. And Scotty's like, he's like Gene Kelly out there. He's doing the shuffle. And I remember we had Nick Price on the show, and he predicted the downfall of Jordan Spieth because he said that he had happy feet and it couldn't last. When you look at Scotty Scheffler, we know he's great now, you know, historically great. Can it last, really, with that footwork? Can he keep that together for 10 years, for 15 years more?
That's a good question, because it's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what he does at with his finish and what he does with his feet, it is baffling. But when the ball lands, it's always near the pin.
Yeah.
It's crazy. but I think Nick Price, who's a very good assessor of the golf swing, because he had one great one, is maybe right on. But as a young man, I think Scotty can handle it. And the beauty of Scotty is he's not changing. He's got the same teacher that he had when he was a kid. And don't forget, when he was playing AJGA championships, he was winning more than half the tournaments he played in. So he's used to winning with that swing. And I think he's not going to deviate from it. He's not going to listen to the experts and try to change it.
Right. We've seen some horrendous disasters of people trying to go for an extra couple of yards or be a little bit more cookie cutter, if you will. And it's had disastrous results for them. And he's not going to do that. He's definitely going to be his own player, and he's going to do his own thing, whether it wins or whether it doesn't. He seems like he's definitely going to do his own thing. So now we got to get into our favorite part, because now everybody's, you can hear the rustle of people getting out their pencils and papers and writing down their betting slips on this one. So you sort of picked your favorite here. It sounds like Scotty Scheffler is your favorite. Am I correct on that?
I am. And also he's got the whole package. He can move the ball right. He can move the ball left. And that's what he was talking about a couple of weeks ago, why he likes golf courses with trees, because he thinks you should be able to hit one shot on one hole the way the hole is formed, and then hit the opposite shot, go left on another hole. So he doesn't have the advantage of having the trees on this golf course, but he does have the advantage of keeping the play. So I would say, yeah, he's my pick.
He's your pick. Now, if you can't hear the drum roll on this side, but I will have a drum roll here. What do you think the winning score will be?
Well, it depends if it rains again. You know, it really helped Johnny Miller shoot a 63 in 1973. So if it rains again, I think it's going to be under par, maybe 4 under par. If it doesn't rain again, I think, you know, 1 or 2 under par. And maybe there's only one player, like Tiger Woods, to the best base flag. Maybe just one player.
Okay. And like, again, Rose at Marion. So one player under par. That our prediction is Scotty Scheffler, the only player under par at either somewhere around either a 4 or 5 under or a 1 or 2 under.
I would say 2 under.
Two under. You have the number, ladies and gentlemen. The number has been set by the expert, and I think it's a great bet. Most of golf agrees with you that Scotty is the one to beat. If there's a dark horse that you'd have to pick, who would you choose as one to watch who's not really, maybe not out in front of the predictions, but somebody who you really think can do well this week on this type of golf course?
Well, I think Morikawa. And he is the term dark horse because nobody's talking about him. But he helped me hit shots at Torrey Pines when we were changing the golf course. He certainly does hit it straight and off the tee. It's going to be a player that does hit it straight. Don't forget the fairways are a little bit – Bodenhammer, who really does a phenomenal job setting up these golf courses. I mean, he's a real gift to the game of golf for the USGA. But he's widened these fairways because the rough is so penal and the bunkers are so penal that the fairways are averaging 28 yards wide, and Justin Rose says a couple of them over 30. So the fairways are a little bit wider for U.S. Open, so a straight hitter has an advantage, but it helps other players like Scotty too.
Yeah, I agree with that. Morikawa is a great choice because he doesn't hit it quite as far as the others, but he does hit it mighty straight when he's in his groove. And if he gets a hot putter, he could really be a contender right here.
And remember this, Michael. They can't add any more length at Oakmont. They've tried over the years. I think they've added a little more length this year. But there's only two par fours over 500 yards, and they're barely over 500 yards. And those are, so there's a lot in the 480s, 470s, but those are short holes for these guys. I mean, look what Rory McIlroy did at the TPC Sawgrass. He hit a driver and a 9-iron on the par 5-16th in the playoffs. So, I mean, they're going to hit a lot of wedges into those holes.
Yeah, it's phenomenal how far the modern game has gone with these guys. And that's why it's kind of amazing to me that year after year, open after open, you still see Oakmont challenging these guys because it is just that difficult of a golf course. I know it's not a public golf course and most people won't get a chance to play there, but when you do see the golf course, you fully understand what is going on there and why it's so difficult for the great players in the world. Where are you going to be watching, by the way? Are you going to be there? Or are you going to be watching from home, from some course you're building? What do you got going on?
Well, right now, I'm heading out to Sakonnet, my course on the Cape, where they're playing the Mass Open. So I'll be watching from there a little bit, and then probably back in East Hampton, where I have a summer home.
Excellent. That's not far from my summer home in my dreams. Okay, yep, got it.
I bought it a long time ago, so I bought it 30 years ago, so it was a very good investment.
Outstanding. If there's anything I can do for you there, let me know. If there's anything.
Absolutely. But remember, one final thought. I mean, the one thing about Oakmont, you got to keep in the fairway. You got to stay out of the bunkers. You got to stay out of the rough. But even when you get to the green, get on the green, you're not home because those contours are very severe. There's a lot of pitch. Those greens are 8,500 square feet average, but they look like big targets. But there's a lot of small targets, a lot of subtleties in those greens. They're hard to read, and they're like glass. And they're going to be, and as I understand it, they're going to be in the 14s on the stint meter. And for greens with a lot of contour like that, there's going to be a lot of three putts. I mean, when Palmer lost to Nicklaus in 1962, he three putted 10 times, and Nicklaus only three putted once. And that was the difference. So it's going to be probably won or lost on the green surfaces.
That's a really good prediction there. And I won't ask you for your best score that you've ever shot there, but I will ask you if you have a favorite hole at Oakmont.
I think 17. My friend Vinny Giles made a hole in one there. There's been two holes in one, and it's like the first drivable par four. They tried to change it. My father moved the tee to the right, and then they moved it back. So they're actually making it more of a drivable par four before. It was a drivable par four before drivable par fours came into vogue. I did have the good fortune of playing with Jack Nicklaus probably 20 some odd years ago. And he made me play from the back tees. And I played with my friend Steve Smyers and with Bobby Weed. And when we finished the round, none of us had a score.
That's like a great mystery novel there.
Yes.
The mystery of the missing score at Oakmont. But the course itself, it really is, despite its difficulties, despite the challenge, it really is a joy to play it. It really is a special course in that way. It's not a hardship. It's a blessing to be able to be out there. And it's certainly a blessing to be able to have you, Reese. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us and give us some insight into this great golf course. And we'll probably hit you up afterwards, too, to see what you think and to give us some insight into the rundown of the events of the day.
Well, the beauty of Oakmont, I think, is it's a boutique golf course. It's one of a kind. It's like Pinehurst number two, and I think that's why both these courses are on the rotation of the USGA, because it's really something you have to learn the golf course, and it's so different from any other golf course you'll play around the country. So the practice rounds are really important.
It's going to be special, and I'm going to go turn on Golf Channel now. Go watch some stuff. So, again, really appreciate you. And we'll be hitting you up again soon, okay?
Great, Michael.
Terrific. That is the great Reese Jones, the Open Doctor, talking about the great Oakmont golf course. It has challenged players for years and will continue to challenge players. And what I think is most special about it is it always produces a special winner. You always look at someone and say, yeah, that person... You can point to their career and say that is a special win. That's a real addition to the gifts, the things that a wonderful golfer has done to win the U.S. Open at Oakmont. I can't wait. I really can't wait for this. And it's going to be special. I know you can't either. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more golf and stuff. Michael Williams, 19th hole. Well, that's it, and that's all for this episode, this special episode of the 19th hole. I would like to thank my guest, my friend, Reese Jones. He is, I mean, just not even a storehouse of information. He is like a warehouse of information. He's got everything that you would need to know about golf, past, present, and looking into the future. And I just feel so lucky that I get a chance to talk to him, and frankly, that you get a chance to listen. It's really something special. It really feels incredible to have him on the show. And we look forward to having him on again to maybe give us some analysis of what we are going to see this wonderful U.S. Open weekend. Of course, thank you for listening. You guys are the joy in my life because you make time to listen to this show. We'll see you next week with more stuff about golf, about the U.S. Open, and you know anything else that happens to interest me. In the meantime, it's golf season, man. Get your clubs out, get your balls clean, you heard me, and go out, put a peg in the ground, hit some balls, and when you do, hit them straight. Michael Williams, 19th hole.